There was a tragic event that took place in the life of David in the Old Testament. What a great king of Israel he was. He led Israel to greatness and to power. And yet in 2 Samuel chapter 15, we find David fleeing his son Absalom, his own son. And David, in fleeing from Absalom, takes his servants and his family and his army with him, those who would go. And the Bible says in chapter 15 and verse 30 of 2 Samuel that he wept as he went. And then in 2 Samuel, and you may as well turn to this passage because this is where I'll be preaching. I'll be referring to a number of verses in 2 Samuel chapters 13, 14, 15, and 16, and even some later on, but I'll just refer to those, and you may take note if you so desire. In chapter 15 and verse 30, we read that David wept as he went, but then in verse 31 of chapter 15, he prays concerning the conspiracy that his son David was involved in taking the kingdom from him. So David prays this prayer in 2 Samuel chapter 15 and verse 31, where he says this, after one had told him that Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom, and David said, O Lord, I pray thee, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness. You can see the trust that Absalom had in Ahithophel back later on in chapter 16 and verse 20. And so there's this counselor, Ahithophel, who is advising Absalom, a man who had advised and counseled David. And so there's a conspiracy where David is just so betrayed. And so he prays, David does, that God would take the counsel of Ahithophel and turn it into foolishness. That prayer is answered in chapter 17 when there was another counselor by the name of Hushai, and his counsel actually was accepted against that of Ahithophel. A great battle takes place in chapter 18, verses 6 and 7. And in this battle, Absalom, in chapter 18 and verse 9, is caught in a tree. He must have had quite a head of hair because he was caught by his hair. Joab, David's general, we'll call him, his commander, came up to him. He found out where he was hanging in the tree. And with three darts through the heart, he killed Absalom. In chapter 18 and verse 33, David mourns his son. Oh, Absalom, my son Absalom. But that just gives you just an overview and a very brief overview of what I really want us to see, and that is the expression that is found in 2 Samuel 15. And here's the expression in verse 6. It's in the latter part of the verse, but we'll read the whole verse. And on this manner did Absalom to all Israel that came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. I don't know about you, but with me, the name Absalom is always associated with a heart stealer. And this message this morning is not a warning to you if you are a heart stealer. It's a warning to you to be careful of those who steal hearts. Because if there were heart stealers taking place in that day, and we see it taking place in the New Testament as well, you better believe it's happening today. Have you ever heard some of the stories that have been told about men, a man who can come on to a woman, marry her, and she later finds out that she is one of three present wives. You ever heard stories like that? How could a man fool a woman like that? By stealing her heart. A lot of people are involved in the stealing heart business. Could be a child who's grown out of the home, not serving the Lord, but when they come home, they're so kind, and it's almost another stealing the heart episode. Could be a neighbor. I read about a neighbor, a situation where a neighbor literally stole a child from their neighbor, and they never suspected that neighbor because that neighbor was so kind and so generous and everything. And for 50 days, they couldn't find the child, and the child was in the neighbor's house next door. And when they found out who had stolen their child, they just couldn't believe it. And the reason was is that neighbor had stolen the heart of that entire household. This takes place today. I mean, we're warned in 2 Corinthians that you've got to be careful about the fact that the devil sometimes comes and appears as an angel of light. And so don't be surprised when his ministers do the same. The heart is the seat of emotions. So when someone steals someone's heart, they steal their emotions. And somebody else over here could warn you about that person and say, watch out, this is what a young person faces when they're interested in dating and so forth. And you have to tell them, you have to warn them time and again, be careful about your emotions, because your emotions can cloud your thinking. They can steal your heart. That's why a Christian young man or a Christian young woman should always be careful about even getting involved with an unsaved person, because that person can steal your heart. When someone has stolen your emotions, it's hard for you to accept the truth about them. For that reason, you need to be aware of any high emotion organization where everything's based upon emotion and ginning you up and getting you excited and to where you almost can't think straight. Because the heart takes control of the head. So if someone is good at stealing hearts, I would sure like to know how to identify that kind of a person. I'd like to know, what are the characteristics of a heart stealer? Because that's Absalom. He stole the hearts of the people. What were the characteristics of this man where he could do that? I'd like to know how to identify him. How can I know? What are some of the characteristics? And I find at least three. I know there are more, but there are three that I would like to share with you this morning about this man, Absalom. And all three on the surface, all three of the characteristics on the surface, we would call virtues. Three vices with the face of virtue. And as virtues, it can cause you to overlook the vice behind those virtues. Does that make sense? And so you've got a heart stealer is not going to come out and be blatantly wicked. That's Satan, isn't an angel of light. He's going to use virtues to trick you. And so as the story of Absalom unfolds in chapters previous to this, you find out more about him. To start with, back in chapter 3, 2 Samuel chapter 3 and verse 3, you find out that Absalom is the third son of David. His mother is Maacah, M-A-A-C-A-H, daughter of a king. So think about it. Absalom's father is a king. Absalom's grandfather on his mother's side is a king. Here's a man who grew up with all kinds of privilege. But let's look at some of the characteristics of this man. And I call this the three pence, P-E-N-T-S, the three pence of a heart stealer. Because each word starts with a P and ends with E-N-T. Maybe it'll be easy for you to remember these three characteristics of a heart stealer. Here's the first one. It's the word patient. Absalom was a very patient man. You see, he had an older brother. In fact, David's firstborn son, his name was Amnon. Therefore, Amnon was most likely to be in line to be king. And so if you're not the first one in the family, if you're not in line to be the king, and if you're going to topple the power structure to allow yourself to get in, you've got to be patient. You've got to work incrementally. We're going to look at that word in Sunday school this morning in the adult Bible class, incrementalism. You've got to work incrementally. It's what the devil does. The devil works step by step. And the devil is very patient. Maybe you've heard what China has in mind for world domination. And the thing that men say who are very studied on China is how that China is in no hurry. They are being very patient. They're looking at the long term. And they have desires within the next couple of years to take Taiwan. They have desires within the next 15 to 20 years to be the world power. And they are working toward that very patiently, step by step. It takes patience to be a heart stealer. David was a patient man. For years, he fled from Saul, knowing that he was to be king. Now, when he flees Absalom, he patiently endures the curses of a man by the name of Shimei in chapter 16. Joab says to David, when this man is on the other side of the mountain throwing dust at David and cursing David, Joab says, "Let me get at this guy, I'll take his head off." And David says, "What have I to do with you, you sons of Zariah?" David was a very patient man. And we, from this passage, see that Absalom is also a patient man. The passage I'm talking about is chapter 13. Go back to chapter 13 of 2 Samuel. Let's look at something that took place. Chapter 13 and verse 22, "Absalom spake unto his brother Amnon, neither good nor bad, for Absalom hated Amnon." But here's the reason he hated him: because he had forced his sister Tamar. The story is in the passage earlier than this. But I want you to see his patience. In verse 23, "And it came to pass after 2 full years. Now, I don't know if I would be that patient to wait 2 full years. And it goes on to say in verse 23 that Absalom had sheep shearers in Baal Hazar, which is beside Ephraim, and Absalom invited all the king's sons. And Absalom came to the king and said, 'Behold, now thy servant hath sheep shearers. Let the king, I beseech thee, and his servants go with thy servant.' And the king said to Absalom, 'Nay, no, my son, let us not all now go, lest we be chargeable unto thee.' And he pressed him, howbeit he would not go, but blessed him. Then said Absalom, 'If not, I pray thee, let my brother Amnon go with us.' And the king said unto him, 'Why should he go with you?' But Absalom pressed him, that he let Amnon and all the king's sons go with him. Now Absalom had commanded his servants, saying, 'Mark ye now when Amnon's heart is merry with wine, and when I say unto you, smite Amnon, then kill him. Fear not, have I not commanded you, be courageous and be valiant?'" That's as much as I'm going to read. But this shows you something, how patient Absalom was to get revenge with Amnon because of what Amnon had done to Absalom's sister. He was a patient man. But I want you to consider the name Absalom itself. The name Absalom. You know in the Bible that they would name somebody because of what they had in mind for the parents, what they had in mind for them, maybe some characteristic of the child, but they would give that child a name, perhaps of something they desired in that child's life. Think about the name Absalom. Think about the word Absalom. That's what it is. Abba, Ab. If you go to a Hebrew dictionary, the very first word in the dictionary is Ab. And it's the words that a little baby would say, a little Jewish baby would say at the very beginning, because babies can say, you can go Abba, 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 Father. And what's Shalom? Shalom. Ab, Father, is peace. Father is peace. Or Father of peace. It's probably the fact that he was the Father of peace. Since David, his father, was a man of war and wasn't even allowed to build the temple, most scholars believe that Absalom means Father of peace. And it's easy to confuse patience with peaceful. And I think we need to understand that just because someone is known by a certain name doesn't necessarily mean he lives that name. Any more than the fact that you're called a Christian. So many people are called Christians today who do not live up to that name. Absalom did not live up to his name. But it sure is a good name to have if you want to fool people. It sure is a good name if you want people to think that you're patient. So Absalom was the one patient without the other peaceful. The patience was just a cover-up that would allow him to deceive his half-brother Amnon. And he actually spent 2 years quietly nourishing his anger. I can think in the animal kingdom of animals that are very patient. Lions are very patient. Cats are. I love to watch a cat going after a mouse. I love to watch the stealth, the quietness, and the tremendous patience. I can't crouch down for more than maybe 5 seconds, and a cat can crouch on all fours ready to pounce. The same that is true of a cat in your home is the same for a lion. And who do we know to be a lion in the scriptures? Well, two. Satan as a roaring lion, but then you have Jesus Christ in Revelation chapter 5 as the Lion of Judah. But my point here is that a lion can be very patient, and the devil is a lion. The heart stealer never comes at you really displaying who he or she is. The heart stealer will wear the garment of patience, which makes you think that that man or that woman has intentions of peace, will not cause trouble. Watch out. I was reading an article years ago by a man who was a young man at the time. And he was talking about how to get into a church and take over a church. Oh, he didn't call it taking over a church. He was just a young man who grew up in a fundamental Baptist home, became very disenchanted with fundamentalism, independent Baptists. And so he wrote this article about how all of you other young fundamentalists can get into your church and eventually take it over. He didn't use the words take it over, but that's essentially what he was talking about. And he used this little phrase, just adapt and wait. In other words, become like everybody else. You use the same language. Tell everybody or make them think that you believe the same way they do. Adapt. But wait. And as you adapt and become more like them, You're secretly in your heart, because you're a heart stealer, thinking about what you can do one day to have stolen the hearts of everybody in that congregation so that when the pastor dies, when he retires, or when he just moves on, you're the next one in line that everybody's going to say, hey, let's get this guy in there. He's great. And then what he was in his heart becomes very visible. Because he had stolen the heart of the people. After killing Amnon, Absalom flees to Grandpa. Grandpa Talmai, that was the king's name, his mother's father. And he waits there for 3 years. What a patient man. So that's the virtue, patience. What's the vice hiding behind the face of virtue? It's hypocrisy. Giving people the impression you're one thing when really you're something totally different. Hypocrisy has to do with a play actor. On stage, he's something, he's one thing. On the platform, as he's doing his acting routine, and if you're watching this play, you're just captivated by this person, and this person almost becomes a celebrity to you, like so many celebrities in Hollywood do today to people, because, oh, wow, what a great actor, that was so great. Then you see them, and it's almost like that person is the same person you saw on stage. No, he's totally different. He may have really been something on stage, but in real person, they're repulsive. And you're not interested in him because he's a hypocrite. He's an actor. Absalom was an actor, but came across as patient. So that's the first pent. Patient. Here's the second pent, the second characteristic of a heart stealer. Penitent. He was penitent. Now, all of chapter 14 is a chapter where obviously Absalom is down there with Grandpa Talmai, and David wants to bring him back. So he's brought back to Jerusalem by Joab, David's captain. But David now refuses to see him. For 2 years, he refuses to see his son Absalom. In chapter 14 and verse 25, here's what you're going to find out about Absalom. But in all Israel, there was none to be so much praised as Absalom for his beauty. From the sole of his foot, even to the crown of his head, there was no blemish in him. Then it talks about how he did his haircut. He was very handsome. There was no blemish in him. For 2 years, he dwells in Jerusalem without seeing his father David. Verse 28. So Absalom, trying to get his father's attention, actually burns or sets fire to Joab's field to get his attention to gain access to his father David. And it worked. And he's finally allowed to see David. And note what is taking place in chapter 14 and verse 33 when he sees him. So Joab came to the king and told him about what Absalom had just done. And when he had called for Absalom, he came to the king. And what did he do when he came to the king? He bowed himself on his face to the ground before the king, like he was penitent. And in a sense, he was. He was sorry. He was full of regret. But I want you to note something. He was penitent, but not repentant. Big difference. A penitent. And this is one of the characteristics of a heart stealer. Just go back to the normal routine. Forget about everything I've done and get down to the business that they're really there to do. And of course, one of the main things is make people feel sorry for you that you're being mistreated. Which really brings us to this. He's really not penitent, he's proud. Penitence is the face of virtue, hiding the vice of pride. Watch out. He's stealing your heart. As a young teenager in a church years ago, we had a youth pastor. I was just coming into the seventh grade in this church. And in this church, all the young people sat on the first two rows, not the front row, but the second two right in the center. And so I graduated from sitting with my mom and dad because all teens had to sit up front. All the girls in the second row, all the guys in the third row. So I was in this youth group as a seventh grader. Now I'm joining my older brothers and sisters. And so there we are in this church, and the youth pastor is a married man. He's in his 30s. And he was somebody you would really like. He was just a very kind man. And yet he was very generous with his time. He was the kind of a guy who would like to get to know you. But he did something in the church, having stolen the hearts of everybody, especially the youth group, where he got involved in all kinds of immorality. Acted like he was repentant when he was basically just saying, I regret what I did, because he would do it again. On the face, penitent. Beneath, very proud. Penitent is the second characteristic of a heart stealer. The third and the last is the word pertinent. Pertinent. That's the virtue. You say, what's pertinence? Well, since you asked, I looked up these synonyms. Somebody who's relevant, applicable, appropriate, fitting. Just what we need. That's the word pertinent. Just what we need. And if you look at chapter 15 and note what it says in verse 1, you're going to see one of the first things about his pertinence that is a virtue. And it came to pass after this that Absalom prepared him chariots and horses and 50 men to run before him. Here you see that he was a leader. The spirit of Absalom is that attitude which seeks a following for self-exaltation. The spirit of Absalom is not someone who builds Israel to its greatness. David had already done that. Note that. Israel is a powerful nation under David, the great king. Absalom could not compete by building his own nation. He could only steal the hearts of those who were already part of a great kingdom and offer them what they think, this is the impression he's trying to get, that I'm even greater than my father. Going back to that illustration I was using before about this young fundamentalist who was writing this paper on how you ought to adapt and to wait. His whole point was this. Don't go into a church. Why start a church on you? Why plant a church? Take a work that somebody has already built. You've got the building, you've got the congregation, you've got the money, hopefully. Here's what you've got. Why do something yourself? Take what's already been built. And that's what Absalom did with David. Why didn't he just go found his own nation somewhere? Because he couldn't. David's kingdom is prosperous. The enemies on the outside are defeated. Now the greatest danger comes from within by someone who wants to gain a position. And it's his own son. Understand something, folks. The devil cannot build a great kingdom on his own. He can't do it. He must steal from God's kingdom through enticement. The tragedy is when we help. The tragedy is when we allow Satan to steal hearts. I think it's interesting how men in unsuccessful pastorates, and I'm not saying somebody who's got a large church, I'm just talking about somebody who's going from one church to the next because he's there for a few years and the people don't like him, so they push him out and he moves on to the next church, and they push him out, he moves on to the next church, they push him out. I find it interesting how some of these unsuccessful scheme to discredit the pastor because they can't lead a people who really know them. So they have to go steal someone else's sheep. That's what Absalom's doing. He gives the impression, I'm a leader, in verse 1. And then he presents himself as he does in verses 2. Let's just look at verse 2. He presents himself as a judge. And Absalom rose up early. By the way, notice he's willing to make a sacrifice. He rose up early. How many of you got up really early this morning? I'm not an early riser. I mean, 5:30 is early for me. He rose up early. He was willing to make a sacrifice and stood beside the way of the gate. You'll learn from Old Testament history that the gate was putting yourself in a position of authority. And Absalom has nothing else to do. So he places himself in a position of authority. And it was so that when any man that had a controversy came to the king for judgment, so he's intercepting those on their way to the king. Then Absalom called unto him and said, of what city art thou? And he said, thy servant is one of the tribes of Israel. And Absalom said unto him, see, thy matters are good and right, but there is no man deputed of the king to hear thee. Absalom said moreover, oh, that I were made judge in the land, that every man which hath any suit or cause might come unto me, and I would do him justice. King's too busy. Let me help you. Here's a man who has nothing else to do, but he can sit at the gate and give advice. And all a man or a woman has to do is find some disgruntled people who believe they didn't get a good enough hearing and they deserve more, and they would say, I would do him justice. I could help them. And it's interesting how they don't know the details of these people like the king does. But that's of no concern. I can help them. And you can do something for them, even if it's not what they really need. You just give them what they want, not what they need. I would do him justice. Here's the lie of the devil. The devil says to you and to many, as a Christian, all you do is suffer. You're always the victim. Give money to me and you'll be prosperous. You're not getting the right treatment here. And Absalom, who wants to give these people just what they think they need, is only interested in himself to be the judge. And so you read this in verse 5. Because not only is somebody pertinent, a leader and a judge, but verse 5, a comrade. And it was so that when any man came nigh to do him obeisance, he put forth his hand and took him and kissed him. A companion. I'm your buddy. I'm just like you. The king will never kiss you like I will. The king would never do, you see, and he's not saying this, he's just doing it. And people go home and they say, you know what, I was on the way to the king, I was on the way to see the king. And his son Absalom, you know that real tall, good-looking guy, he was sitting there at the gate And he was helping his dad. He was there and he stopped me and said, "What can I do for you? My dad's pretty busy right now. What can I do for you?" And I want to tell you something. He gave me such good advice. Not knowing that it wasn't good advice. It's just that this man took interest in him. And he has the time to do it. He flattered the person, but nobody would ever say, "I was flattered." But these people are flattered. Note the words of the Apostle Paul. In the last chapter of the book he wrote to the Romans, verses 17 and 18, he says this, "Now I beseech you, brethren, mark them which cause divisions and offenses contrary to the doctrine which ye have learned, and avoid them. For they that are such serve not our Lord Jesus Christ, but their own belly." Here it is. "And by good words and fair speeches deceive the hearts of the simple." Good words, fair speeches. So what you see is the face is pertinent. Somebody who is giving me just what I need. That's the virtue. What's the vice? Flattery. On the surface, pertinence. Under the surface, flattery. This is what happens every election year. You see this happen all the time. Closer it comes to an election, notice how the people that you would typically vote for all of a sudden start becoming more conservative. And then after the election, they go right back to what they were. But they get on a stump and they start proclaiming just, "Here's what I'm going to do," and they never do it. Absalom was a very good politician. So how do you ensure that your heart will not get stolen? And every one of us is under that threat. Well, the first thing is this. It's imperative that you walk closely with the Lord. Young man, young woman, that you walk closely with the Lord. As you consider a possible mate, you walk closely with the Lord. He knows our hearts. We don't. Here's what he says. "Your heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it?" Jeremiah 17:9. But the next verse goes on and says, "I, the Lord, I search the heart. I know the heart." The closer you walk with God, the one who knows your heart, the more he will protect you from having your heart stolen. Beware the spirit of Absalom. And note how he stole the hearts of men who at one time were very loyal to David. And remember that behind those three virtues, there's a vice. But they're only going to present the virtue. That behind the virtue of patience is one who really doesn't have peace of mind. He's a hypocrite. That behind the virtue of a penitent, there may be the vice of pride. That one who seems to be pertinent and have your best in mind may actually just be flattering you. And you say, "How am I ever going to know who it is?" I go back. Walk with the Lord. Walk with him. So long as David was walking closely with the Lord was speaking to him. He was warning him. David could ask him, "Lord, should I go? Should I attack them?" And he would say, "No, I want you to do this. Go around." And the Lord gave him the things to do. I'm not saying that God's going to speak to you like that today, but he will keep you in the way. And when you walk closely with the Lord, it means that you're in his word. And you will know that thy word is a lamp unto my feet and a light unto my path. Instead of a stolen heart, keep thy heart. with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. And you can say with the psalmist, Psalm 57:7, my heart is fixed, O God, my heart is fixed. My heart is established. My heart is not one that somebody can come and steal, because Lord, my heart is yours completely. If your heart is his, if you are right with God in your heart, no one can steal it. Pray for the Lord to protect our church from heart stealers. Pray that the Lord would keep your heart from being stolen by somebody. That none of these three vices that have the face of virtue would characterize you, but that you would also recognize these in somebody else. Watch out for somebody who flatters. Watch out for the proud person. Watch out for the hypocrite. Which of those is the hardest one to really see? Probably the hypocrite, because they're such good actors. That was Absalom. Lord, keep us in the right way. Lord, may we be found faithful. May you find each of us faithful, that none of us would be involved in trying to steal other people's hearts. May each of our hearts be right with you. Lord, to keep us from being deceived. May we not be flattered. May we not be gullible to hypocrisy or to the pride of someone else. May we truly walk with you, walking in obedience to your word. This we pray in Jesus' name, amen.